4. Jake woke in the first milky light of dawn, looking up at the ceiling of his room. He was thinking of the guy in the Manhattan restaurant of the mind, Aaron Deepnow, who'd been hanging around on Bleecker Street back when Bob Dylan only knew how to blow open G on his honer. Aaron Deepnow had given Jake a riddle. What can run but never walks, has a mouth but never talks, has a bed but never sleeps, has a head but never weeps. Now he knew the answer. A river ran, a river had a mouth, a river had a bed, a river had a head. The boy had told him the answer. The boy in the dream. And suddenly he thought of something else Deepnow had said. That's only half the answer. Samson's riddle is a double, my friend. Jake glanced at his bedside clock and saw it was 6:20. It was time to get moving if he wanted to be out of here before his parents woke up. There would be no school for him today. Jake thought that maybe, as far as he was concerned, school had been canceled forever. He threw back the bedclothes, swung his feet out onto the floor, and saw that there were scrapes on both knees. Fresh scrapes. He had bruised his left side yesterday when he slipped on the bricks and fell, and he had banged his head when he fainted near the rose. But nothing had happened to his knees. That happened in the dream, Jake whispered, and found he wasn't surprised at all. He began to dress swiftly. 5. In the back of his closet, under a jumble of old laceless sneakers and a heap of Spider-Man comic books, he found the pack sack he had worn to grammar school. No one would be caught dead with a pack sack at Piper. How too common, my dear. And as Jake grabbed it, he felt a wave of powerful nostalgia for those old days when life had seemed so simple. He stuffed a clean shirt, a clean pair of jeans, some underwear, and socks into it, then added Riddledy Dum and Charlie the Choo-Choo. He had put the key on his desk before foraging in the closet for his old pack, and the voices came back at once, but they were distant and muted. Besides, he felt sure he could make them go away completely by holding the key again, and that eased his mind. Okay, he thought, looking into the pack. Even with the books added, there was plenty of room left. What else? For a moment, he thought there was nothing else. And then he knew. 6. His father's study smelled of cigarettes and ambition. It was dominated by a huge teakwood desk. Across the room, set into a wall otherwise lined with books, were 3 Mitsubishi television monitors. Each was tuned to one of the rival networks, and at night, when his father was in here, each played out its progression of primetime images with the sound off. The curtains were drawn, and Jake had to turn on the desk lamp in order to see. He felt nervous just being in here, even wearing sneakers. If his father should wake up and come in, and it was possible, no matter how late he went to bed or how much he drank, Elmer Chambers was a light sleeper and an early riser, he would be angry. At the very least, it would make a clean getaway much tougher. The sooner he was out of here, the better Jake would feel. The desk was locked, but his father had never made any secret of where he kept the key. Jake slid his fingers under the blotter and hooked it out. He opened the 3rd drawer, reached past the hanging files, and touched cold metal. A board creaked in the hall, and he froze. Several seconds passed. When the creak didn't come again, Jake pulled out the weapon his father kept for home defense, a .44 Ruger automatic. His father had shown this weapon to Jake with great pride on the day he had bought it, 2 years ago that had been. He had been totally deaf to his wife's nervous demands that he put it away before someone got hurt. Jake found the button on the side that released the clip. It fell out into his hand with a metallic snack sound that seemed very loud in the quiet apartment. He glanced nervously toward the door again, then turned his attention to the clip. It was fully loaded. He started to slide it back into the gun and then took it out again. Keeping a loaded gun in a locked desk drawer was one thing. Carrying one around New York City was quite another. He stuffed the automatic down to the bottom of his pack, then felt behind the hanging files again. This time he brought out a box of shells, about half full. He remembered his father had done some target shooting at the police range on First Avenue before losing interest. The board creaked again. Jake wanted to get out of here. He removed one of the shirts he'd packed, laid it on his father's desk, and rolled up the clip and the box of 44 slugs in it. Then he replaced it in the pack and used the buckles to snug down the flap. He was about to leave when his eye fixed on the little pile of stationery sitting beside his father's in-out tray. The reflectorized Ray-Ban sunglasses his father liked to wear were folded on top of the stationery. He took a sheet of paper, and after a moment's thought, the sunglasses as well. He slipped the shades into his breast pocket. Then he removed the slim gold pen from its stand and wrote, "Dear Dad and Mom," beneath the letterhead.